Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 31st, 2013. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, award-winning mead maker Matt Whitey joins us to share meads from a split batch and meads based on a very old recipe that requires burning honey. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can find me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. Our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus, too. And thanks again, everybody who clicks on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. You know how that works. Whenever you think of shopping on Amazon, especially during the upcoming holiday season, go to our website first, basicbrewing.com. Click on our Amazon ad. That will take you back to Amazon, where you can shop as you normally do, not paying a cent extra, but helping us out to support this show. And we greatly, greatly appreciate those who are doing that. We also have associate links that work in the same way for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Home Brewers Association on our site as well. Our Basic Brewing iPhone app is on iTunes, and our Android app is on Amazon.com. We're in the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well, and we're on the Windows Phone directory, too. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at BasicBrewingShop.com. In the front is a blank calendar that you can use to track your fermentations, plan your brews, and there is room in the back of the book to log the details of up to 50 batches of beer. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can do so by going to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who has done so already. And protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Lots of stuff to cover today. First off, since it's Halloween, it's the deadline to get your data in for the Basic Brewing Radio Beer and Wine Journal IPA experiment. Remember, this is the one where we're testing the effect of different chloride to sulfate ratios on the hoppiness of beers. And I know from reading the comments on the original article on Beer and Wine Journal that there are some who are playing along with us. So we're looking forward to seeing what you have. And if you are playing along, you can enter your data right now on the form at basicbrewing.com/experiment. That's basicbrewing.com/experiment. And we'll examine the results in next week's Basic Brewing Radio and on the journal site as well. Perhaps by the time you are listening to this, our annual Halloween episode of Basic Brewing Video will be online. This week, Steve and I create Frankenbraggots. On-the-spot blendings of beer and mead-based products. It's a really tasty show, and it's a great idea for creating well-balanced braggots on the fly with your own homebrew versions. You can look for recipes for Steve's beers that we used, beer and a sizer, and then also another mead. You can look for those recipes in the Basic Brewing app, and in the episode description of that show on basicbrewingvideo.com. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag. Matt Bowling from the American Homebrewers Association writes in and says the 2014 AHA National Homebrewers Conference will take place June 12th through 14th in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Proposals for seminars are now being accepted and will be reviewed by the American Homebrewers Association Governing Committee, Conference Subcommittee, Local Conference Committee, and the AHA staff. This year's conference theme, Mashing in Michigan, will cover a broad range of educational seminars focused on a variety of topics. Interested parties are asked to review the presentation guidelines and requirements and submit a proposal for a seminar or poster. Proposals will be collected until December 13th, 2013. For more information, you can contact Matt at matt@brewersassociation.org. And if I can be self-promoting here, if you want to put together an experiment or demonstration that we can talk to you about in Grand Rapids for this program, please let me know. The past few years, we've been able to generate a lot of great content at the Homebrewers Conferences, thanks to listeners like you. And you can help us by putting together something and getting together with us. Now on to another Matt. Matt Whitey is a member of the Minnesota Homebrewers Association, a BJCP certified judge, and an endorsed mead judge. And to top it all off, he's pretty darn talented at making meads himself. I invited Steve Wilkes to help me sample some delicious meads from Matt, including some Beauchets, which are meads based on a centuries-old recipe that requires burning honey before fermentation. Matt Whitey, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James. It's great to be here.
And joining me in the studio for the always arduous task of tasting award-winning meads is Steve Wilkes.
Glad to be here, James.
Now, we had a missed chance at meeting in person several weeks ago, Matt. You came in through Northwest Arkansas, and about that time, so did a stomach bug in my family. So I was flat on my back while you were enjoying beers down at Fossil Cove and such as that. So I apologize that we couldn't do this in person. But hopefully we'll make up for it this evening.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was I was just looking forward to a chance to share some of my meads with you. I've been a big fan of the show for many, many years and participated in some of your experiments. So I thought it would be a good chance to meet up with you, but maybe next time.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. Give us a shout when you're in town. Let's say we're kind of dividing this into two sections here. One is talking about doing split batches of mead, and then the other is kind of an old approach to a burnt mead. But I got to brag on you though. You've done some award winning here lately.
Well, that's right. Speaking to the Beauchet, I actually just won third place in the Hoppy Halloween contest up in Fargo, North Dakota. So I was happy that that other people saw some validity in the Beauchet mead, which is a very old mead, but of course seems like it's getting a lot of resurgence here over the last few years in the mead community. And then the Key Lime mead, which won first place at the National Homebrew Conference this year. So we have that, and also a variation of that mead, Mojito mead or a mint flavor added to that mead, as well as an Arnie Palmer, which has lemonade and black tea added.
Oh, cool. Well, awesome. Where should we start?
Well, why don't we start with the Key Lime mead, because that's really the base of what we need to talk about today.
Okay. So we're starting at the award-winning mead from the National Homebrew Competition.
Right. I'm actually going to pour along with you here because I haven't had one of these in a while. And essentially, this came from Joe's Ancient Orange Mead. It's a web-based, very classic mead, but it was a variation based upon Byron Birch's recipe from his first place award, I want to say 2007. Somewhere around there, you actually led a panel, and he was talking about this mead and using key limes instead of maybe orange or some of these other recipes. And I started investigating that and using that as a base mead, this using key limes, and then splitting it off into variations. So I take a 5-gallon batch, put it into 5 different 1-gallon containers, and then just make a key lime mead, a lime and lemonade mead, an agave mead, so I'd actually use agave sugar, pouring that into the secondary when the mead was maybe 50 to 75% complete fermenting. So you can make a lot of different variations off the same mead, a mojito mead, which we'll talk about next, where I took the key lime mead and essentially just made a mint tincture. Hmm. And added that to the mead and has a very much that mojito taste without overpowering the floral aromas of the honey itself.
This is delicious. It's very good. It smells just like a key lime pie.
It does.
I'm going to have to keep my 13-year-old son out of here because he's key lime pie is his favorite dessert. I don't want him into this, but...
So this was
very good.
Approximately 13 pounds of wildflower honey with 3 gallons of water. It was about 1175 to begin with, finished out at about a very sweet 1050. So it's about 16% alcohol. It has a nice warming, but I don't feel it to be boozy.
No,
not at all.
And it's not hot at all. What was the yeast in it?
The 7-1-B-1122 Narbonne Lavalin.
Okay.
That's what I basically use for all of my meads, with the exception of sometimes I use D47. But when you do the split batches or multiple batches, I like to be able to aerate and not cross-contaminate with different yeast. So yeah. I generally stick with that Narbonne yeast.
Yeah.
And it's... It comes out pretty well. It's a nice fruity yeast that attenuates well, and I know what it's going to do. It's going to eat 100 to 120 points every time for me, so I grew accustomed to it.
And this was not back sweetened.
No, it just had a heck of a lot of honey to begin with, and that's one of the issues that you have too with putting this much honey into the mead along with the acidity right up front. I actually put a little bit of key lime juice at the end because I am worried about the pH levels dropping too low and causing the yeast to lag or have problems fermenting. So I pitch a bunch of yeast. In the recipe that I have in Zymergy magazine, I didn't think it was going to win, so I didn't really put very much detail into it. But I actually... You have to do it ahead of time, right? So I didn't expect to win. But I do a very large starter, and then I just aerate the heck out of my meads. Two, three times a day, if possible. So to really make sure that they get a lot of oxygen uptake, and probably I stop doing that when it ferments out about halfway. And then that's when I make my decision if I'm going to just keep it as a regular mead, keep the whole 4-gallon batch, or if I will start splitting it out and then adding other flavors, like for instance the agave sugar, that would be a great time to then add that syrup into another 1-gallon batch, and then you'll start to get that margarita type taste. Yeah. So
what do you do about the yeast nutrient?
I use staggered nutrient additions. So I use Go Firm for rehydrating my yeast, then one part Fermade K, two parts DAP, diammonium phosphate. DAP and Fermade K. Yep. So sometimes I'll use the Y yeast wine blend. And that works well too. It's just they have a secret blend that I don't exactly know what's in that. So. Hmm.
And what's your strategy of when to add each stage?
When I have time. That's one of the great things about mead is where beer I often feel compelled to have to rack or get it off the yeast or do different things. Mead, it's fairly easy. So sometimes I'll try to do it all within the first 3 days, or sometimes I'll do it staggered nutrient additions within the first week or 10 days. So it's really when I have time. I travel a lot for work. But the point is to make sure that you're adding nutrients, because honey, of course, doesn't have very much in the way of nutrients. So,
and then how long does it take for this mead to finish out? From start to finish, before you put it in a bottle?
Well, I made this mead on 10/26/2012. I bottled it March 24th, 2013.
Okay.
So it was pretty much done. In January, that's when I added a little bit more of the Nelly and Joe's key lime juice, and I prefer that because it's already been pasteurized, doesn't have any sulfates or anything in there, and then I can just add in to taste. So it was a little bit too sweet. I think I could probably even added more key lime juice, but I added that in kind of at the end, so it made sure that the pH didn't go too low, and then bottled it in March. So really, from beginning to when it was fully fermented, 2 months?
Oh. And then how do you decide that it's fully fermented? So if you have a product that finishes at, say, 1050 or 1030 mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, so if you're a beer maker, you kind of look for that 1010, 1012 before you go, okay, this is done. But if you're dealing with meads that you know are going to be left sweet, you might have a fear that, oh, my gosh, if I put this in the bottle, mm-hmm. what's going to happen? So how do you decide that this is done?
By taste. To be frank, I kind of take your method, Steve, being a cook. Yeah. Baking, I kind of equate to beer making, and it has to be somewhat exact. And with mead making, there's more of a sense of you can kind of add a little bit here and a little bit there, as long as you do that towards the end of the ferment. So I guess I don't know. You ask a question, and 1050 to me is a little bit sweet, but when I tasted it and added some more citrus or key lime juice, it just mm-hmm. tasted right. At that point, it was pretty much done.
Right.
So I could have added, let's just say, the EC 1118 type yeast to really get it dry if I wanted to, but it tasted right. I didn't need to sulfite it or put any Camden tablets or anything to stop fermentation. Sometimes that's what I'll do, especially living up here in Minneapolis. I just put the meat out on the porch overnight and then cold trash it and then add some kind of sulfites to kill off the rest of the yeast activity.
Yeah.
If I fear that it will go too low, because I don't like bottle bombs.
Mm. Right.
So
yeah.
We've all been there.
Oh, yeah.
So I try to avoid that at all costs.
I've got a lovely mead right now which tastes wonderful, but it's overprimed. I mean, and so when I'm now opening the last few bottles of it in the sink, and I get a nice little geyser. It's lovely, and so you get a little floor show, and then half a bottle of mead.
it's sparkling in a la the fountains in Las Vegas.
Yes.
So tell us again so we move from the key lime with just the main batch is based on key lime, and then at the end of the you split that up, and then you get a little bit more creative to build on top of the key lime flavor, right?
Wow.
So when I determined that the mead is close to done fermenting, I will split it off into 4 or 5 gallon containers and decide what I want to do with it. In this case, the example that I sent you was a mojito mead, which essentially is just the addition of a mint tincture, where I took fresh mint, chopped it up real fine, put it in Everclear, a few ounces of Everclear. After several days, I filtered that through a couple coffee filters. So I ended up with just a light green type tincture that I then added to the mead itself. And that's what we have here today.
Wow. It's very good. The mint is just, it's fresh. I mean, it's exactly what you would want it to be. It's fresh and green and minty fresh. You know, it's just really great.
Green in flavor, not in color.
No, not in color.
So the mead is still golden, but yeah, it is very fresh, and it's very aromatic.
Mm-hmm.
And
sometimes mint can be kind of musty tasting and smelling to me.
Mm.
And maybe that's just me, but when mint is handled correctly, and maybe it's a kind of mint, I don't know, but this is just really exactly what you'd want it to be.
Mm. Very well balanced, yeah. As far as so how did you figure out the balance? Did you just taste as you went along, adding just a little bit, or did you pull a small sample of the mead?
Right, it was a husband and wife team event. We took probably 2 ounces of the base key lime mead, put it in different glasses, and then I added different amounts of drops. You know, up to think I ended up going with a full teaspoon per 12-ounce bottle. So it's not a lot of extra alcohol compared to the key lime, but there is a teaspoon extra Everclear in that bottle.
Mm. Yeah.
So watch out when you drive home, Steve.
I will. Well, and we should note that we're being responsible. We're pouring small samples in our little plastic sample cups here, and there's quite a substantial amount left in each bottle that I actually have my capper up here with some star sand that I'm going to sanitize some caps, and we're going to save the largest portion of these and probably divide the – well, we'll have a wrestling match afterwards to So we are being responsible, and these are big. Although they don't taste big.
They don't. No, they don't. They don't drink big.
No.
So the key line comes out to be about 16%. The mojito, something over that.
Uh huh. I just don't have words.
It's very good.
Yeah,
yeah. The you still get the key lime flavor, mm-hmm. But then there's that meat in there, or the meat mint in there. It's already working. I've had a couple of mojitos in my time, but is it mojito-esque? I mean, if
sure.
you were to sample it,
yeah, it is. And I'm like you. I mean, I've only had two or three in my life, but yeah, it really does remind me of that. The mint just really makes that pop out. It seems like it brightens the flavor. I like, you know, just the original key lime. I had a question about why you used like commercial lime juice and not squeeze some key limes.
Lazy, I guess. The worry, and I've used fresh fruit before.
Mm-hmm.
I worry that I get a little bit too much. Too many bugs, I guess. I worry about my sanitation and hand squeezing and using all my equipment. And I'm very good with sanitation, but it's one more expensive. I can buy a bottle of this Nelly and Joe's key lime juice for maybe $4.
Yeah.
As opposed to buying two or three bags of key limes, worrying about, you know, maybe having to do a Camden tablet. And I really try to avoid adding extra chemicals to my meat if I can help it. So I just find it's already been pasteurized and maybe it wouldn't be, maybe it's not quite as fresh. I don't know, but there's a little bit of laziness, cheapness, and worry about sanitation all rolled into one.
Well, no. And key limes, aren't they smaller than, I mean, I'm not real familiar with
the, they're real
I'm
tiny.
Familiar with the pie.
Now, is the Nelly, is that the kind, it comes in like a little yellow bottle? Is that the kind I'm thinking
Correct.
Of? Yeah, sure.
In the grocery store,
yeah.
and it's been pasteurized, but there's not a lot of nasty chemicals added to it. So
yeah, I keep that around the house. I make margaritas out of it. So yeah, it's great stuff.
Now we're moving on to the Arnold Palmer. So what other variations did you make on the on that key lime mead?
So in this one, the agave sugar, and then also lemonade. So I made lemon lime, agave, which is essentially a margarita, which I've done well in some competitions on that with that recipe. So essentially, four different variations on the same base recipe.
So this is the Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, now this is a different batch. The Arnold Palmer is from we're splitting away from the key lime, and we're going a different direction now.
Yeah,
but it sticks with the same theme in terms of using some kind of sour citric note to balance the sweetness. So there's sweet and sour. I'm a big fan of that. Obviously, Mellow Mells are a huge area in terms of competitions that lots of people make, you know, fruit meads. But I find I like sweet meads. I make dry ones too. But when they're really sweet, it's nice to have that sour twang to it that helps balance it out. So it's easier for me to use a sour, like a lemon or a lime mead. Now, in this case, I actually cheated because I was actually going for an Arnold Palmer taste, which... Now you can, Steve might say that I should be using fresh lemons, but in this case I actually use the powdered citric. It comes in very small packs. It's just pure lemon flavoring. It's very, very sour. I don't know if you've ever seen that in the grocery store, but again, it's a way of me kind of taking a taste, adding it, taking a taste and adding it. And then I would, then I added tea. I steeped some black tea in a little bit of water and then added that to the mead to give it kind of that Arnold Palmer. And that's the same thing. You could add the key lime juice to this lemon mead and make a lemon lime mead or, there's a vast array of meads that you can make off of the lemon base. And I have used fresh lemon juice before, but in this case, I was looking for that almost like that Arnie Palmer Arizona iced tea type of flavor.
Right, right. Well, the tea, I think, really adds a tannin note to it that I think is really nice. And yeah.
It's kind of perfumey. There, I mean, it's very kind of floral and citrusy and perfumey in a good way.
In a good way. Yeah, it'll make your putter stand up.
It's a family show, Steve.
Well, if Carson can get away with it, let's hook it eye.
Well, he had, who was the drummer?
Oh,
to give him, it wasn't Ed Shaughnessy, was it?
No. Well, Shaughnessy was there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. See, this is the mead-driven bunny trail. That's tasty.
That's tasty. Yeah.
Now, as far as the technique goes, did you deviate? Did you do this one any differently from the earlier one?
Well, in this case, it was actually a base of orange blossom honey, and then at about 50% attenuated, then I started breaking it out into different meads, and then I added this lemon and black tea to it towards the end of the ferment. So, yes, I did deviate in the fact that I didn't put it in the lemon, the citric acid, essentially, into the initial ferment, just because I am worried about the pH. I don't often test for pH, but I do worry about it, especially when it's been several days and my mead's not bubbling away. So in this case, I went a little bit and deviated, but I did split it out then to several different other flavors. And I'm just a big fan of that small batch because mead is quite expensive. Honey is expensive. Yeah. And if you want to buy a nice commercial mead, Redstone, there's a whole bunch of meaderies out there that make great stuff. But I kind of like playing around with different flavors. So,
well, you're a home brewer.
Yeah.
And that's where I got my start. I am a home brewer. I've been brewing since 1995. BJCP judge, the whole bit, but in the same token, I have a family, two kids, the whole working and mead is just so much more easy on your lifestyle in terms of having it works on my schedule.
It really does. Kind of mine too. I find that when I'm pressed for time and I just have the itch to do something, it's a lot easier to throw a batch of mead together than to get out the brew house and, you know, get that all opened up. I wanted to comment on this Arnold Palmer mead in that I really get a sense of sage out of it, which I know there's no sage in it, but there's something about that tea that just gives it a really herbal note that I really find very compelling. And it's just interesting that it reminds me very much of sage.
Well,
that's sage advice.
Sage advice.
I believe it's just black tea, but you can play with all different types of teas. I was really going for that kind of commercial-esque. In fact, Bee Nectar Meadery was part of the inspiration for this recipe, and they have a. I was at the Great Taste of the Midwest in Madison, Wisconsin this summer, and they had a. Arnie Palmer-esque mead, and it was just wonderful. And there's all sorts of different ways you can go with it. More lemon, more tea. What kind of tea do you want to use? The options are endless.
One of our friends, a listener, and I really apologize that I can't get his name, but he brought a lavender mead to one of the NHCs, and boy, was it good. I mean, I've never forgot it. It was such a wonderful mead.
Well, we've got his name. I believe his name is James, and I think he's on camera. I think we talked to him on camera.
Yes, we did. Yeah, James. That's right. Thank you very much.
I think
I'm a little older. My memory's going. but nonetheless, the point was that you can just play with all sorts of things, and you can just kind of express yourself through your mead.
Right. Lavender was one of the first herbs that I've never played with mead. I scored a 14 in competition, which is basically the lowest you can go because I just used way too much lavender. And I still have a few bottles in the basement trying to figure out when it's going to not smell like grandma anymore.
I was going to say, that's grandma's bathroom.
It will keep fleas out of the house.
Some meads are tasty, and this was a teacher. It taught me not to do that again. Yeah. So.
Okay, now we've moved to the dark side. This is a completely different subject.
This is the Boucher.
This is where the chapter marker would go if this were if we had that technology. But what have we gotten ourselves into here now, Matt?
It's a Boucher. It is a very, very old mead recipe. And the segue is you had a podcast on NHC. You had a mead panel. And Charlie P said, "Has anybody heard of Boucher?" And there was great mead or mazers up there, Kurt Stock, and nobody seemed to know what it was. So that kind of piqued my interest and in doing research on it, and finally got the courage to start making it a couple years ago and through trial and error. And ran across, and maybe we should start with the traditional recipe. This is from 1393. Let me see here. Yep. And it is.
Here's the difference here.
Yeah. 1393 from a French book that basically is a treatise or tells women how to be better wives. And one of the ways that they could do this was to make mead. And it's an old recipe. Please don't send emails to me on this one. and it was the main component that I got out of it was that you're supposed to burn the mead until black puffs of smoke come out. So that was what I was looking for. And there's a YouTube video on it describing the process. And essentially, it just was something I wanted to try. And the segue from the sweet and sour meads is this is almost an astringent. It's burnt. If you think of Guinness or some of our the beers that are, have highly kiln malts. So this is another way, another flavor component that you can use. And I'm testing out different ways of splitting it out and adding oak or bourbon or vanilla or different spices to it. But this is just a traditional mead, and you're probably not going to like it because it's super astringent, but it is the traditional recipe that I try to follow as best I can. I'd be happy to send you the link if anybody's interested in following it, but you can just Google 1393 mead recipe, and I think you should be able to find it. The thing I'd have to say, though, in terms of making it, there's a few things you should know. One, the burnt nature of the mead, just burning it, it lingers in your house, or in this case my garage. I had the doors open. It lingered for literally days. It was bad. I really enjoyed making it, but it really lingered. So you want to do this outside. You also don't want to do this during the summer when any bees are around, because they love burning honey, and they will start going into your mead, and that doesn't make for good mead. And it's also dangerous because they might come after you. Secondly, the volume in which you have, so if you're, let's say, using 5 pounds of honey, you want to use at least a 5-gallon pot. I have a 10-gallon pot, and it really, the volume of the bubbling, it's like making candy, essentially. It starts, it starts splattering. So I recommend doing this outdoors during the winter and wear lots of clothing and protective eyewear.
You mentioned you burn the mead until it puffs of smoke come out. But
you're burning the honey, right?
The honey.
Correct. There is no water.
Just as a clarification.
Yeah.
So you take 5 pounds, let's just say 5 pounds of honey, and put it in your pot and turn on the burner. Uh-huh. And it will start caramelizing that honey. And it'll start really frothing up and boiling over. It's quite exciting, and then eventually it drops down into a soup of some sort. It's inverting the sugars and burning them, and there's lots of carbon. I'm not quite sure, but it's quite interesting to watch. And then eventually puffs of black smoke start emitting from the bubbles.
And then you know who the Pope is.
Right.
Well, I wanted to ask, now, do you have to stir it? I should say, when you're doing sugars, like even making caramel or making Belgian candy sugar, you don't stir it. Because, you know, at some point, because you can screw up the crystallization, how the crystals come together. Is there anything to worry about there?
I stirred quite a bit, mostly out of concern for it coming out of the pot. So the stirring actually kept it down. So I'm not a candy maker, so I can't speak to that. But it does it really increases in volume. So stirring it felt like a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard part here is people ask me, well, then how do I know when it's done? And if you follow this recipe, you only know when it's the black smoke. When that comes, then you know the Pope is here. No, the meat is ready, and you take, and what I do through trial and error is take about 1 gallon of water and slowly pour it in and try to incorporate it slowly, because if you pour, let's just say, 3 gallons of water right on top, it will form gelatinous or candy-type masses at the bottom of the kettle.
Yeah.
So you really kind of want to, one, again, wear eye gear and make sure, because there will be some splattering.
How long do you let it cool before you start adding water? Because I would be afraid of it really almost exploding.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It's not that bad. I have the same fear, but I turn the burner off and then immediately just start pouring in small amounts of water. So maybe a quarter gallon, then another half gallon. Yeah. So I have about a gallon and try to make sure that's all incorporated, and then I pour in the rest of my water for this recipe.
Well, I have to say that my first sip of this, I thought, oh, I don't like this. And now that I've had 3 or 4 sips of it, and really just sips, it's kind of growing on me. It's certainly not a session mead.
You
can drink a lot of this. But my palate's adjusted to it a little bit, I think. And it's not as bitter or – I don't want to use the word off-putting, but it's not as, it's just not as in my face now that I've had a little bit of it on my palate. Plus, we were drinking that very sweet, very easy drinking
it is
mead before
switching
that.
Switching gears without the clutch.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like espresso with some burnt marshmallows thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's not, but you're right. The first couple of sips is like, this is
challenging.
Yeah. But now that, you know, now that I've switched gears and
it's very coffee-like.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I thought it was, I wanted to send you this. It's maybe it wrecks your palate a little bit, but then maybe the next Boucher that we'll try won't seem as difficult. You said the transition. Now the next meat will seem a little bit more easy on the palate, I guess.
It seems like a good transition point.
Yes.
Right. Well, and then I'll tell you how I actually make my Boucher as opposed to the 1393 recipe.
And this one that we're about to sip is an award winner.
Right. This one recently won 3rd place at the Hoppy Halloween contest. And the difference here,
oh boy,
is that I added only a small portion. Let me bring up my recipe here.
That's good.
I added 4.5 pounds of honey and burned it at about 15 minutes, where the other one ended up going about an hour and a half.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. So the traditional recipe really burns it, and I found about 15 minutes on my Blickman burner gave it the right amount of color, but didn't give it that same kind of sour astringency that the traditional recipe gave. And then at the end of the 15 minutes, and basically I'm just going by color. So I think I sent you a link, James, of a picture that I took of the different, for my pan, or my pot, I should say, at different time intervals. So I literally take a little dollop out every 15 minutes, and that kind of shows me where I'm at. And an hour and a half, it's just black. And at 15 minutes, it's dark, but has more reddish hues to it. Mm-hmm. And at that point, at 15 minutes, then I took 15 pounds of orange blossom honey and added it to the end. So I turned off the burner and then added, you know, literally 60% more honey, hopefully to try to retain some more of that aroma. And I also worry about the carbon and inverting the sugars from the burning process. Some people on the internet claim that they have a hard time fermenting it at times. Mm. With that traditional recipe.
Yeah, you can actually see through this one, and it has reddish hue. But that was going to be my next question, is how do you ferment this stuff?
Same way. So GoFirm, Fermade K, DAP, staggered nutrient additions, aerate the heck out of it. Mm. I would say that I had to get a stainless steel stir for my power drill after this, though, because the plastic one that I had ended up getting so stained from the Bochets, because it stains pretty good. So I'd also recommend doing transfers in an area that you don't have any problem with ruining the floor or something of that sort. It's pretty potent stuff. So stir, aerate, and just ferment it like you would a normal mead.
Wow.
It's very delicious.
Yeah, this is a whole lot easier to drink. It's sweeter. It seems like to me there's a little more body to this mm-hmm. this one than the first one.
It still retains those coffee notes and that roastiness a little
right,
bit.
Right, but it's not burned coffee.
Right.
It's not truck stop coffee.
My Aunt Bythie's coffee.
Right.
But, yeah.
I think that's a result of adding the honey after. So,
yeah.
So you really only have to burn a small amount to get some of that mm-hmm. same toasted marshmallow type taste, mm-hmm. and then you can add it to the orange blossom honey and get a much more mellow. But yet that astringency does counterbalance the sweetness, because the OG and the final gravity are almost identical for these two meads that you're drinking.
Huh.
So they're very close, yet one is, as you said, more like truck stop coffee.
Mm.
So, and now the alternate method, which is, some people may know, is to forego all of the pain and misery of having splattered honey shoot out at you from the pot, is actually using a pressure canner. So you can use, you actually put the mead or the must into into jars and then can them. And I believe that's probably a better way of controlling exactly the amount that you burn the honey or the must. However, I had one bad experience doing it, because I think I just rushed the process and I ended up breaking one of the jars in the canner and then decided to abort mission. So yeah. I think long term that's probably going to be a better way to kind of scientifically measure it, because everybody has different ways or different size pots and different size burners and different ambient temperatures. A pressure canner is truly a way to say, okay, at 15 PSI or at for 60 minutes is going to give me this kind of color, this kind of caramel and toasted marshmallow taste. So I think you probably better control it using that method. But in my one attempt at it, I had a bad experience. So
it's a little like the making dulce de leche, the Mexican sweetened condensed milk that you cook very slowly over a long period of time, and it caramelizes like in the can. You can take and buy a can of, you know, like, sweetened condensed milk and put it in some water and just let it go forever, and it will...
Sealed.
Huh? Yeah.
That doesn't sound safe.
Well, it's not. It's also called an IED. But I don't know, but that is a way to do that. And that's what reminded me of this discussion, was a kind of sealed way of caramelizing things.
Right.
You're the chef around here, Steve.
Well, that at least that's what his hat says.
That's veteran chef to you.
Now this has taken us over, over the past a little over half an hour, we've gone almost, you know, from one side of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah.
In flavors and colors, and it's all in mead.
It's wonderful. It's I have nothing to add to that. It's really good stuff. Excellent meads, Matt. Really terrific, and I'm in honor and awe of what you've made.
Yeah, just wonderful stuff.
Yeah,
and we have more to share later. Maybe our spouses are nice to us. We'll
yeah. Maybe.
Although I don't think, well, I don't know. My wife likes the stouts and porters. She might like the darker mead.
Yeah.
So, wow. Anything else to add? Any more tips and tricks that we haven't talked about?
Not really, James. I think everything that I've done is just, children on the shoulders of giants. Many of these methods are all out there. I've just kind of used some of the things that I've learned from your show to split batches and utilize different flavor profiles to make exciting meads. And I just wanted to share that with you too. And maybe the next time I'm in your area, we can sit down and have a beer or a mead. And it's been great to be with you here today.
Yeah, beers are on us.
And usually my dinner.
I hold you to that.
Awesome. Thank you very, very much, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to Matt and to Steve. The Bochets were very interesting and pretty darn tasty. Especially the one where Matt did a little variation on the traditional recipe. I just love expanding my palate in such a dramatic way by tasting new stuff that I've never tasted before. And I can definitely see Bochet in the future as at least one batch for Steve and me to play with. Steve says he wants to make a Bochet sorbet. So I just want to mention Lou Reed. Appreciate Lou Reed for all the inspiration that that he's given everybody who listens and loves his music. The New York album is one of my favorite albums of all time. And Lou Reed, along with Elvis Costello, have gotten me through a bunch of tough times. And so it's always sad when we lose a great artist. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Our Basic Brewing growler bags are available in our shop. Protect your precious homebrew and your craft beer as you take it from place to place. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering, Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. We got shirts in the store, too. Our brewer's logbooks are in the store as well. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Sun's Tea 18-ounce Ultra Clear Spill Proof Strong Double Wall 3-Piece Borosilicate Glass Tea Tumbler with Strainer, and Hoosier Hill Farm Coarse Pretzel Salt 2 pounds. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly, greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com as well. So until next time, until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.